This is Rich Lee speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. Good afternoon. I'm Chris Nolte. This is the second of a two-week public information campaign against smoking, and we'll bring to you our conversation with Irene Boone Phillips and Mike Meska, both with Franciscan Health, about it. We'll also, of course, bring you Green Fleet Radio with Carl Lissick. Today he talks with David Wright from the Gary Public Transportation Corporation. This conversation about public transit here in Northwest Indiana. And we'll also, of course, bring you a Lakeshore Focus conversation with Keith Kirkpatrick. All that coming up on Regionally Speaking, but first the news. This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. Irene Boone Phillips and Mike Meska were with us recently to talk about the public information campaign that is once again underway this week in Northwest Indiana to encourage Hoosiers to stop smoking or to not begin in the first place. And we begin the conversation with a sobering message.
A federal court has ordered Lorillard, Altria, Philip Morris USA, and R.J. Reynolds Tobacco to make this statement about the health effects of secondhand smoke. Secondhand smoke kills over 38,000 Americans each year. Secondhand smoke causes lung cancer and coronary heart disease in adults who do not smoke. Children exposed to secondhand smoke are at an increased risk for sudden infant death syndrome, SIDS, acute respiratory infections, ear problems, severe asthma, and reduced lung function. There is no safe level of exposure to secondhand smoke.
That is one of the messages that is being released, has been ordered by the federal courts, and is part of the media campaign from the tobacco industry, admitting to the public that they were deceived. And we'll find out more about that and all the other programs that are underway this week in particular and next week, the week of February 12th and February 19th, all across Indiana. You'll be hearing stories and conversations about how it's no longer necessary for Hoosiers to suffer or to see their loved ones continue to be targeted by the tobacco industry. With us today, we have in studio Irene Boone Phillips, who's the program coordinator for Franciscan Health, and her colleague from Franciscan Health, Mike Meska. Irene is the program coordinator for the Lake County Community Tobacco Prevention and Cessation Program, and Mike Meska's title is a long one here, but we'll just suffice to say that he is Franciscan Health's administrative director involving respiratory therapy and represents the Dyer, Hammond, and Munster campuses of Franciscan Health. Irene and Mike, thank you for joining us on the program today.
Thank you so much for having us today.
And first, if you will, Irene, give us a little history lesson here about the necessity for the tobacco industry to have to bring all this up. We thought that was years ago that the word was finally put out about the fact that the tobacco industry had been deceiving the public about the health and safety of cigarettes and any kind of tobacco material.
Well, apparently, there has been many years of suppression of information. So what we're seeing now with this court order is that that information is now coming out, where we are educating the public, where the tobacco company, in their own words, are admitting that nicotine is addictive, secondhand smoke is dangerous, there is no safe level of exposure to secondhand smoke.
When you have such an admission, it's certainly newsworthy in itself. It was back then. It still is today. And I imagine now, especially with this public information campaign that is underway, that it's probably become even more important for Hoosiers and the entire American public to know about the dangers of smoking.
Yes. And as a matter of fact, this is an opportunity for the community to kind of tell their story. We're going across the state of Indiana, and all across the state, we have our community members that are telling their story about how tobacco has impacted their lives. We have a friend, Nancy, who told us about how her mother, who went to work where they allowed smoking in a work area, in a workspace, and she came down with lung cancer, never smoked a day in her life. Mm-hmm. So secondhand smoke took her life. And those are the types of stories that we are hearing throughout the state.
If you will, give us a little rundown on the statistics about the dangers of smoking, and better still, if you can kind of bring it home to Northwest Indiana.
Well, that is something that I think that Mike is very well with the statistics.
Okay.
So, Chris, thanks for having us on today. And we kind of go through, and this is a topic that's important to not only Franciscan Health, but also our partnering hospitals that represent the 9 largest healthcare organizations or hospitals within Lake County specifically. For years and years, we've struggled with tobacco and the nicotine addiction, and we want to help people kind of come through the tobacco recovery. That being said, Lake County has perpetually had a high smoking rate and an adult smoking rate specifically. Mm-hmm. We recognize within Lake County until last year that the rate of smoking tobacco and smoking cigarettes in Lake County was in excess of 26%. And that's not a Mike and Irene number. That's actually a number that has been determined through the Indiana State Department of Health and some of the surveys that they do to determine populations that that are at risk that smoke cigarettes. The underpinning of that is there were over 90,000 people when it was 26%. The most recent data is it's at 24%. So that's almost 1 in 4 adults that smoke cigarettes. It's a significant spend economically. And more importantly, the unseen health consequences, they're downstream. We chalk it up as frequently that some people are just they're becoming aged or becoming deconditioned. And in reality, it's the negative effects of tobacco. Mm-hmm. So still close to that 90,000 mark of number of people that smoke in Lake County.
Give us an idea in context with the rest of the Hoosier State. How does Northwest Indiana, with such a high percentage of smokers in Lake and surrounding counties, how does that compare to the rest of the state of Indiana?
If it was a good thing, we would say we were above average.
Right.
So it's not a good thing. And we would say Lake County specifically is actually higher than the state average. And we're actually essentially about 1.5 times the national average. Mm-hmm. So, again, if that was college graduation rates, we would pound our chest and jump up and down for joy. That's not the case with cigarette smoke. And again, we want what's right for folks and residents of Northwest Indiana, specifically within Lake County.
We talk about adults being smokers, but unfortunately now we find that we have high schoolers, younger people that have taken up smoking as well, too. And there's also, too, this other issue that I guess doesn't really come to light sometimes. It kind of flies under the radar, so to speak. It's how young people are using vaping and methods other than burning tobacco to get hooked onto the habit or starting out that way, and that in turn builds onto the habit. Eventually, they'll start actually smoking cigarettes or other materials.
Correct. That is a concern, and that is what is actually happening, where the tobacco industry is promoting these products, the electronic cigarette products. For instance, if you look at what they call the juice, the sauce, the blow sauce. It's in flavors of cotton candy, green apples, all those type of flavors that are attractive to youth. And so that's how the tobacco company is continuing to target our youth and to get them started. The electronic cigarettes is not safe. It is nicotine. We know that nicotine changes the brain, and it particularly changes the brain of a youth, of a teenager, because their brain is still developing.
Or it's actually funny. I guess it's really just another form of nicotine that before, if you were burning tobacco, you've got the nicotine that way and all the other byproducts, so to speak, of burning tobacco. But now you have this more concentrated program that's coming up to just by a pure chemical, right?
Yes. Yes.
One of the things that comes into play as well, too, and how I'm sure that Northwest Indiana is ranked, certainly by the Indiana State Department of Health on being so high in the number of smokers, is also dealing, too, with whatever, I guess, cost financially that there is. We know how much it costs Northwest Indiana in all the respects for smoking and for the problems of smoking.
Yes. As a matter of fact, we do know that it costs each household, whether you're a smoker or not, each household spends about $903 towards smoking-related diseases and smoking-related health care costs. Mm-hmm. That's each household. We have about 839 deaths in Lake County alone that are attributable to smoking. And the economic burden of secondhand smoke across the state is about $165 million.
I know that the state also, of course, tracks financial costs by whatever the taxes that might be assessed on cigarettes when they're sold at the retailers across the Hoosier State. And I guess the rankings aren't very good for Indiana as far as being among those states which tax the most. In turn, would be the best incentive for not smoking to begin with, I would think.
No, we're not. As a matter of fact, according to the latest report from the Lung Association, we have a felling grade when it comes down to the cigarette tax. We also have a felling grade when it comes down to the age to purchase tobacco products. Those are one of the things that we want our community to know that they have a voice, and it is time to raise their voice. Raising cigarette tax is a sure way to implement a measure that works to help the kids to not initiate smoking, and also to help those who smoke to quit.
We're talking with Irene Boone Phillips, who is a program coordinator for the for Franciscan Health, and both she and our guest also in the studio, Mike Meska, are with Franciscan Health. And she is working with the Lake County Community Tobacco Prevention and Cessation Program. Mike works directly with Franciscan Health as an administrative director in respiratory therapy. And the problems that smoking can often bring to people who unfortunately contract it here in Indiana. We're talking with Irene Boone Phillips and Mike Meska, both work with Franciscan Health and are both acutely knowledgeable of the problems of smoking and about the results of it. And Mike, if you will, tell us in your work directly within Franciscan Health, with the hospitals and the clinics, tell us about the problems that the doctors and the nurses and the other clinicians encounter every single day, it seems like, from the results of so many people in Lake County and Northwest Indiana smoking.
Sure, yeah. There are so many. They're really kind of innumerable, but I'd be glad to share some of the stories from the bedside, so to speak. I'm actually a registered respiratory therapist by training, so I'm a clinician, work alongside nurses and physicians, and for the last 28-plus years, we've seen the terror that the tobacco epidemic has really lent itself to all the different communities where I've worked. Specifically within Northwest Indiana, cases of lung cancer, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease or COPD, emphysema, challenges with controlling asthma, other things that really kind of relate to secondhand smoke. We see these things continue to continue to see these things, whether they present as a individual that shows up in the emergency department that's short of breath, or shows up in the clinic or their office or the physician's office. So many different ways that it can present manifest, but essentially many of it can get directly traced back to tobacco. In fact, Chris, approximately 4 out of 10 cancers are directly attributable to tobacco.
Mm-hmm.
4 in 10, 40%. That's a significant number, yet we continue to have issues with tobacco causing all kinds of cancer. It's not just lung cancer. 1/3 of all cancer deaths are directly attributable to tobacco. So 1 in 3, if you know someone that has cancer, if you know 3 people that have cancer, there's a chance, statistically speaking, that 1 in 3 of those deaths, if they have passed on, 1 in 3 of those deaths were likely tied to tobacco. Let that sink in for a minute. It's astounding. And so years ago, from a hospital perspective, we used to get paid. The more we did, the more we could get paid.
Right.
And so there's an old adage that says hospital presidents would drive in the morning and they'd see the parking lot full and they'd say, wow, it's going to be a great day. The way the payments are shifting over the course of time really kind of focus more on a population of people. And so we want people to be cared for in the right setting, which isn't the hospital necessarily. Hospitals are great places to come and get lots of medications, get some intensive therapy, but wellness continues to be the trend. So the hospital president of the future would see a hospital parking lot empty or really not many people in it and say, wow, it's going to be a great day.
And I suppose that's because of the fact that with any luck, then the rate of cancer has gone down because the rate of smoking has gone down, and in turn all the other problems that that smoking can bring about. As you mentioned, it's not just lung cancer or cancer, you know, that's related with heart disease. It's all the other cancer. You can get cancer of the liver, I'm sure, just by just your association, I would imagine.
Multiple different cancers, yeah. Including stomach, kidney, head and neck cancers. So to the extent that Irene...
We forget about those, the fact just by mere smoking, by just having that smoke in contact with your mouth and your lungs, your throat and all, it's all more problems there that come about too. It's just besides the lungs.
You got it.
When you look at an opportunity like this within this week and next week for this intensive public information campaign, how do you get started, I guess? Or is there a way that you can get started in bringing out to the public, the average person, if they're not aware of it, certainly, unfortunately, from a personal standpoint or a family standpoint, about the dangers of smoking and about the reason it's wise to quit? If you are smoking, that it does, there is a benefit to stopping smoking, and I guess it's probably more of a benefit than people would realize. Is that true, Irene?
Yes. One of the things they can do if there is a smoker, if they are a smoker, they can go to 1-800-QUIT-NOW or quitnowindiana.com. That is the Indiana State Department of Health website, and there is a lot of information there. They can also kind of reach out to our website as well, tobaccofreelcin.org, and we have a lot of research information there, and they can contact us via tobaccolcin@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. And we can share some information. We can lead them to the places where they need to go to get that information. We are hoping that over the next couple of weeks, people will understand that they need to raise their voice. Our legislators need to hear that people are concerned about this problem, about the tobacco use epidemic, and we know what we can do. What we can do is raise the cigarette tax. By raising the cigarette tax, we price cigarettes out of the hands of our kids. And that's what we want. The tobacco industry knows that if they can get a youth hooked and addicted to nicotine by the time that they are 18 or by the time that they're 21, then they have them hooked for the next 25 years.
Mm-hmm. I guess, and that's why there's such serious concerns about vaping and all, about e-cigarettes and the like here, because of the fact that it's such a concentrated method of ingesting nicotine, and that's where I know that it's been found in the studies that this is it's the gateway, sadly to say, that youth get themselves involved in smoking eventually by just going to the e-cigarettes at first. It's interesting you should bring out the question about the cigarette tax. We know the state representative Charlie Brown from Gary tried during this legislative session to introduce a couple bills, and that was folded into one of the bills too. He was dealing with increasing the age of smoking or making smoking available to young people, but also talking too about the cigarette tax. Unfortunately, neither measure made it out of the Indiana House when it was time to send bills over to the Indiana Senate for consideration. But I know that Representative Brown isn't giving up, and I know that he's not the only person. A number of people in Northwest Indiana are doing their part to try to fight smoking in one way or another. Will you tell us about some of the efforts that are underway by the groups that work with you folks closely?
Yes, I'll get started, and I know that Mike has some information as well. Mm-hmm. Raise It for Health, and that is a group, that is a coalition with the Smoke-Free Indiana, and also the American Lung Association and the American Heart Association. And these groups are coming together to educate our community and also our legislators, the many legislators, knowing that one of the things that they can do is raise the cigarette tax. If we raise the cigarette tax and if we raise the age to 21, we really save many lives. Mm-hmm. We save the lives of our kids.
Mike, would you say if there were a few things that could be put together quickly in kind of closing things here on our conversation to inform people about the dangers of smoking, about the importance of getting help if help is needed, but just staying away from smoking materials to begin with, what that might be?
Yeah, then I think Irene chatted about it a bit earlier in that 1-800-QUIT-NOW. So QUITNOW, 1-800-QUIT-NOW is probably the most easily recognizable, free to all Indiana residents. If they wanted to have assistance in stopping smoking, that's probably one of the things that they could do. Clearly, communicating your desire to quit with your physician. The idea of ask, advise, and refer is a best practice that's recognized. So the physician would ask the patient if they smoke. If the patient said yes, they would advise them to quit. And then the last part is really referring. So to refer the patient on to additional resources is really important. Clearly, we had a significant issue at hand, medically speaking, and tobacco use is really not any different in so many ways. We would want that continuum of care, not just from asking the individual if they smoke and advising them not to, but what are the next steps? So 1-800-QUIT-NOW can certainly assist with that as well.
Are you ready for a big public information campaign, Irene? It sounds like you and everybody that's involved in this has certainly been gearing up for it.
We are ready. We are ready. We do not want to lose another life. One life lost is one life too many.
Irene Boone Phillips and Mike Meska, both with Franciscan Health, a lead community agency for the Lake County Smoking Prevention and Cessation Program. You're listening to Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. Now here's the host of Green Fleet Radio, Carl Lissick.
Well, thank you for that introduction. And today our guest is Mr. David Wright. He's the planning and marketing manager for the Gary Public Transit Corporation of GPTC. David, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Well, getting right into it, David, there are two areas of activity that GPTC is working on regional transport, the Lakeshore area and the expansion on the Broadway corridor. Can you give our listeners some details on both of these projects?
Okay. Well, the Lakeshore area, that's the area near Hammond, Highland, and Munster. We have had some fluctuations in service the last year or so. As many people may know, we actually cut service out there because of cost issues in 2017. Because of the investment from the Lake County government and the city of Hammond, we're actually going to be bringing a lot of that service back.
Wonderful.
Starting in February. The Broadway corridor, we have been planning some service improvements for several years on that corridor, and they're finally going to come into fruition on February 19th as well, where we're going to be upgrading our service between Gary and Crown Point. More routes, more frequency in service, and better bus stations. So
wonderful.
Both of those expansions launch on February 19th.
And if people want to find out more information on that, where they can find, the routes, the times, things like that, where would they get that from?
Well, the best location actually is our Facebook page, where we have a pretty active page where we've been putting the schedules up. We're going to be putting the schedules up for the Broadway service this week. We launched a shuttle in Merrillville a couple of weeks ago, and that schedule launched there too. Our website is www.gptcbus.com, and actually that's going to be improving probably in the next couple of weeks as well. So all of that information, including our bus schedules, are on gptcbus.com.
You know, a lot of exciting things going on, David, and I know that with GPTC, you've just really been working on a whole boatload of new projects, new activities, and it's very exciting for our area. So as we talk about the benefits of public transit to those who don't use it, can you kind of describe how it really improves our standard of living in the region?
Well, what we like to focus on are two things. The reduction in cars on the road, which even if you've never stepped foot on one of our buses, you see that impact. There are some locations on Broadway, for instance, where we are reducing automobile travel by 10% on your average day. So fewer cars for you to deal with on the road. And in addition, those fewer cars also means less air pollution.
Absolutely.
And those are two things that, in my opinion, and in a lot of studies, a lot of agencies that are looking to invest in the metropolitan area, they're looking at some of those issues, and that includes the prevalence of public transportation and air quality. And both of those things are being benefited by transit.
Absolutely. In addition to Gary Public Transit Corporation, are there smaller transit providers in the area?
Yes. As a matter of fact, we are actually, just more specifically, I'm working on redoing our system map.
Okay.
And our system map since 2014 has included the route system for East Chicago Transit. We've got a lot of sections, locations where we intersect, and we do our route planning together in tandem, so we're not stepping on each other's toes. And when we put out our system maps, we make sure both of those systems are on there. We work well with North Township Dial-A-Ride in the Hammond, Highland, Munster, Whiting area. They've got a free Dial-A-Ride service, And we have been working for years on communicating with them so that their riders and our riders are actually able to chain their trips from our two agencies, because they serve areas we don't serve, sure. And we serve areas that they don't serve. So we try to make sure that we are able to have that potential to allow someone to transfer from one route to another.
And again, I think you hit the nail on the head, excuse me, with working together. And mm-hmm. I know that mm-hmm. Gary Public Transit, and you in particular, with you know the different meetings that we've attended, you know, you're like our local spokesperson for local transit agencies. And you know, we always love, you know, you're keeping up on all the technologies, all you know, some of the things that are going on across the country, and how you can better serve you know our clientele here mm-hmm. in Northwest Indiana. So. So has there been any investments in transit by regional agencies or communities?
Yes. That's something that actually has changed drastically in the past 3 years. The town of Merrillville and the city of Gary have been working with GPTC and the Indiana Department of Transportation and the bus shelters in the Broadway corridor.
Right.
If you've been driving on Broadway in the last couple of weeks and you've seen the construction, the installation of those shelters, and they're almost done, and they should be done in time for the Broadway Metro Express to launch. The town of Merrillville, in fact, when they agreed to fund the bus shelters, asked us if it was possible to fund actual public transportation. So the Merrillville shuttle, which launched a couple of weeks ago, is actually in part funded by the town of Merrillville. And lastly, the not really lastly, because there's no more to, as I mentioned earlier, the city of Hammond and Lake County government, they're investing in the Lakeshore service, which is allowing us to bring service back there. And lastly, the Ivy Tech Community Colleges, they are purchasing naming rights for one of our new routes, which demonstrates that they see the value in allowing public transportation to benefit all three of their major campus areas, in Chicago, Gary, and in Crown Point, Merrillville.
Wonderful. So as we wrap up our program, what's the next step for Gary Transit in Northwest Indiana? You know, are you going to be using any type of alternative technologies in the future?
That's what we're looking into. Mm-hmm. We are actually working with some of the staff at South Shore Clean Cities to try to figure out the best step in that direction, you know, either compressed natural gas or electrified vehicles. We're planning to do a fleet audit to see what would be best. There have been a lot of changes on the electric and solar energy field. So mm-hmm. we're looking to see how best to benefit Northwest Indiana when it comes to the cost. But it's definitely a direction we feel we need to go. It's the next plateau.
So as we close out the program, your contact information, website again, David?
Well, my information is planningmanager@gptcbus.com. If anyone has any questions on any of the things that we've talked about today, our website is www.gptcbus.com. Both our Facebook and our Twitter feeds are Gary Transit, and we monitor that constantly, not just for route updates, but you know, information on our service changes. And there's a lot going on. Again, Lakeshore Service and Broadway Metro Express service is going to be launched on February 19th of this month.
Very exciting, David. We look forward to having you back on the show, and that will do it for today's edition of the Green Fleet Radio. Thank you again to David Wright, Planning and Marketing Manager for the Gary Public Transportation Corporation. And Green Fleet Radio airs three times every Wednesday on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm your host, Carl Lissick, and thanks for joining us. And remember, it's never too late to begin your environmental legacy. Thank you.
Green Fleet Radio is made possible by South Shore Clean Cities, and you can hear it every Wednesday during Regionally Speaking here on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, and the podcasts of Green Fleet Radio also available on our website, lakeshorepublicradio.org, as well as on NPR One. Just search for WLPR. You're listening to Regionally Speaking. Lakeshore Focus host Keith Kirkpatrick talked to a global traveler to get what Keith says is a world view. Here's the conversation, aired last December on Lakeshore PBS.
Imagine this, quitting your job, packing your bag, and traveling the world, not just for fun and grins, but to learn and discover. Our next guest did just that. As an environmental, health, and safety professional, she had worked her way up the ranks to become a corporate-level manager. She walked away from her job last October, 9 months ago, and embarked on a series of trips spanning 21 countries on 5 continents. Let's meet our world traveler and vagabond, Janice Landra-Rabel. So glad to have you here.
Thank you, Keith. Glad to be here.
Was that a good description? You just walked away from your job?
I think it's quite accurate, yes.
So what did they say when you said, I'm leaving and going to travel the world?
Shock. Everybody was shocked because I kept the decision pretty close to myself because it had to be from me. I didn't want it to be influenced and I didn't want to be talked out of it.
It's hard to believe that anybody could talk you out of anything since I've known you for a while. But so they, how much notice did you even give?
Not much.
Not much, because you didn't want to be talked out of it.
Right.
Okay.
And I, in the corporate environment I worked in, usually when somebody tenders a resignation, they're let go that day.
Oh, so you were prepared for that.
I was prepared.
Okay. Yeah. So there's probably two questions. I mean, the first one is, you know, why did you do this?
The primary reason is I had really gotten burned out. The environmental health and safety field is challenging. We're constantly trying to work with, but sometimes it appears against, the need for a company to make a profit. And sometimes those battles can really make us weary and we feel that we're not being effective. And I was in a few work environments where it just wasn't possible to make a difference. And I was really getting worn out. I was beginning to question whether this was the right career. And I'd also started to lose my empathy and my sense of humor, which are two core aspects of who I am as a person. And I wasn't liking what I saw.
Well, this is really interesting because so many people experience burnout, get hit a wall in their career, all those kind of things you described, and they don't act on it. They just keep slugging it out and makes it worse oftentimes. But you said, no, I'm not doing this. I'm going to do something else. I mean, that's pretty shocking. Nobody, hardly anybody does that. How did you pull that off?
There were some events that happened in the year leading up that really drove me to it. I lost three of my friends, cancer and other illnesses. And I started asking myself, if today was my last day on earth, would I be proud of what I had done so far? Would I be happy with who I was? And the answer was absolutely no. I was not happy at all. And so I knew the only thing worse than, you know, leaving this earth would be to just stay here and keep doing the same old thing and not getting anywhere.
So to give people, our viewers, kind of a reference point, you worked for some really big companies, right?
Yes.
So here in the region you worked for?
Worked for ArcelorMittal and BP. And prior to that, I worked for URS Corporation, which is now AECOM. And they are tremendously large companies, all three of them. And then I worked for a very large Midwestern-based company called DLZ.
And most of your work was here in Northwest Indiana, Chicagoland region, so with these really big companies. So you said, I'm done, I'm off and running. So what was your, what was guiding you or what was driving you at that point? I mean, where'd you decide to go first? Put your finger on the map?
I was looking at budget. That was certainly a consideration. And so I purposely timed my travel to be generally shoulder season so I could get
what's
around.
Shoulder season?
Shoulder season is between what's called high season when all the tourists cram in there. It's the ideal time to go visit, perfect weather and all that. And then low season is usually when you have the worst weather or things are closed. But shoulder season is kind of in between. So like,
where's
going,
that term come from?
I have no idea.
Is it like because you had a backpack on your shoulder or something?
I don't know.
That's what it sounds like, doesn't it?
It does,
it's the,
yeah.
Kind of, the time of season that you throw the backpack on, which a lot of people do. Did
sure
you backpack
did.
At all? Any of this?
Not in the what people seem to think of as backpacking, like literally hitchhiking around a country. No, I did have a backpack, though, because it's a great way to stuff all your stuff in and keep it together.
They got all the right pockets, right?
Got all the right pockets.
So you kind of had this criteria. Mm-hmm. So where did you end up going first?
I started in Southeast Asia because it had always been on my list. And I figured, why not start somewhere that's very different from here? And it really opened everything up for me, and it got me thinking about exactly what I wanted to, environmental issues, because where in the world are there a lot of changes happening? And when you talk about climate change and you talk about pollution from both automobiles as well as industry, there's a lot of talk about what's happening in Southeast Asia. And also human rights, again, many, many things.
Well, this is part of why I wanted to have you on the show, because this is not a travel log. We're not doing, you know, where did you go and what sites did you see? You know, you talked about these two issues, and I know there's another one, about you were kind of going through the world to look at environmental issues and human rights issues. You were kind of on a discovery trip, right? I mean, why was that important to you, as opposed to doing the typical touristy things?
This had to do with where I fit into this world. So it was, I guess some people could call it a midlife crisis. Hopefully I'm not already midway there. But I had to answer a few questions about myself. First of all, was I just suffering garden variety burnout and I'm just acting like a spoiled brat and I need to get back to work doing what I was doing? Should I be doing a career as an environmental health and safety professional? And if so, what should that career look like? How can I best help? What can I do? What should I be doing? So where's the need?
So part of this discovery is trying to find where you feel your next step needs to be in the world, right?
Exactly. And the best way to do that is to often look back in history. How did we get where we are?
How did we get here? So what's been one of your greatest takeaways? I'll get to some of the other places you've been, but right off the top of your head, if somebody said, what did you gain from this trip? What's the biggest takeaway?
The biggest takeaway is that international travel is probably the most efficient and effective way to trash a lot of the ignorant things that we're being fed through social media and irresponsible news sources. To be able to get on the ground and see for myself how kind, warm, and often funny people are, whether it's in Indonesia, Hong Kong, Chile, anywhere in the world. We're all really the same.
Well, and I know you really like funny for thing. Sure.
Funny
so,
for
so
sure.
So you got a good funny story from any of these places?
Oh my goodness.
Right off, I mean, one of those that made you slap your knee, funny? Maybe you're laughing at yourself sometime.
I think that's probably just, you know, more of it. Standing in the train station in Yogyakarta and trying to figure out how to convert a ticket to a boarding pass, and there's nothing in English, and there's a man wearing military fatigues with a fully automatic rifle that's not letting anybody on the train without the orange thing, and I got the blue thing.
And he's probably looking at you, right?
And I started crying. And I'm not a crier, but at that point I was just like so frustrated. And then all these people came over to help, you know, and then I ended up with the right color pass and I got on the train and everything was good. And but so at every step, people looked out for me, you know, and at that point I really started laughing about it because the world is a kind place and it is a darn friendly place too.
So I was imagining that while you were maybe between tears here and laughter, what were you thinking? What a dumb American, or what in the world am I doing here, or what have I put myself in? What was going through your brain?
Part of me just wanted to go home. I was so uncomfortable, and the environment was just so different from what I had ever been in. And then I thought, it's not that bad. What could go wrong? I'm completely safe. You know, nothing's really going wrong here in the grand scheme of things. I'm gonna be okay.
And that's one of the great takeaways, is we are so used to, particularly as Americans, to be in a comfortable situation. And so it's very familiar. And that's what a lot of people who come to this country as immigrants and visitors feel, is that they're in that same spot, just reversed now. It's really uncomfortable. I want to go home. I'd like to hear somebody speak my own language. I'd like to read a sign that I can read, right? So that's what you were feeling at that moment.
Yes, and then the selfishness aspect of it, because I added to that, I extrapolated from it after seeing how graceful our immigrants are in handling that. You don't see them having meltdowns on our streets. You don't see that happening. They are so incredibly mature and just embracing the newness of everything. And I thought, that's where our innovators are going to come from. Those are real adventurers, and those are the people that are going to take our world where it needs to go. And I thought, okay, this is a cool place. This is going to work out. I can learn from these people.
So what was the biggest surprise or discovery you had environmentally? Just because I know the environment is big for you and you're looking at it. So of all the places you went, just wow, you had that moment when you went, wow, I didn't know this.
I didn't realize that Iceland runs almost completely off of renewable energy. I really didn't know that. And
how did they pull that off?
It's geothermal, so it is very specific to the location. You can't just build what they did anywhere in the world. But it was just tremendously fascinating. And then a very close second to that would be northern Chile, where there was just one solar-powered hostel after another. Everything was solar-powered. Again, though, because they have a particular desert climate, skies that are about as clear as anything as you'd see in the world, and they're just so environmentally conscious because every drop of water has to be conserved. It's so precious to them. And I just really loved that whole way that they really respected the environment.
And they're adapting to their climate. That's what they're doing. They're using that to their advantage. So let's shift to kind of the social justice, the kind of those type of issues. What did you see there? I mean, what kind of like, wow?
The single biggest thing that is most impactful is I really wanted to see how women were treated around the world. And that was probably the part that was most difficult for me to deal with because I realized how far we have to go. The last country I visited was Iceland. There's an index of gender equality that's published every year, and Iceland has continually led the world in gender equality, yet even there, a woman is only worth not even 90% of a man as far as her civil rights and all that go. The United States is 40th in the world. We're only 72% of the way there.
And so we got a ways to go ourselves.
We have a long ways to go. So one aspect of it is that I came away very upset and depressed and thinking, oh my gosh, this is just so sad. And then I thought, wait a minute, there's an opportunity because as a health and safety professional, I know how to apply those principles to a company, but health and safety is a lot bigger. Looking at public safety, civil rights, that aspect of equality.
One of the things the press often comes up with, the media comes up with, is how difficult or really adverse situations are for women in other parts of the world. Were you able to see some of that where you're like, oh my gosh, even though it's not good in the U.S. and Iceland, we're not where we need to be, wow, this is way below standard.
Yes, absolutely. I did see that, especially in the developing countries. So it made me tremendously grateful for coming back to the United States.
Because what country stood out for you in that? Just where were you when you're like, wow, this is pretty depressing?
Indonesia was certainly a country. It is. I was on Java, the island of Java, and that's predominantly, it subscribes to Islam. Not Islamist, though, I do want to make that point. I would definitely call it a moderate version of Islam. But modest dress is required. Women and men that are not related tend to not interact in a way that was good. It was the one place in the world I went and did not get catcalled.
So what's that like?
So wonderful.
This is catcall is just men hooting at you? I mean, men. Mm. So where did this happen mostly?
That's everywhere, and it's just a sign of dominance where men are signaling to women, that they can pretty much do and say what they want, and nobody's going to stop them.
So how did you handle that as an American? I know you've got a pretty strong attitude about things, so how'd you deal with it?
I have a strong attitude, but the reality is if I get assaulted by a man, again, when you look at the gender equality index, if it's my word against a man in the court system, what's more likely to happen? He's going to walk, and my name is going to get dragged through the mud.
There was other issues you were trying to look at. I think you about slavery and just some of the kind of countries in turmoil. What else did you kind of see?
I really took it to heart after the last presidential election about white women letting black women down. And so I really wanted to educate myself more on civil rights and why are things the way they are with people of color. And a good place to look is where colonies were created and the countries that created those colonies, the countries that ran the African slave trade for hundreds of years, and where the wealth went. So many issues there, and I don't consider myself an expert by any stretch, but it really helped to be able to see, like, Indonesia was a Dutch colony, and then going to the Netherlands and spending an entire day doing a black history walking tour with an expert from Suriname who helped connect the dots, and then going to London, going to Bordeaux and other major slave ports and seeing, again, how were things handled and how is that history treated. So that helped a great deal. It helped me understand everything from microaggressions, so I could start to look at my own language, how I speak, to stop insulting people unintentionally, and to even get into my own thoughts and help retrain my brain. Because let's face it, we're all racist, and we really have to admit that.
It's an interesting perspective. I remember being in the Netherlands and seeing the wealth that they accumulated during those years that they controlled a good portion of the world. And then you go to these other countries and you see that there's poverty in these countries. Where did you go? Were you spend some time in Africa?
Not yet. That's next on my list.
That's your next list.
But
okay.
I do want to tell you a story about Indonesia. This was one of the more impactful things that was said to me. Because that is a relatively, it's a developing country, and it only became free in 1944 from the Netherlands. It has a ways to go yet. And so I was able to hire a car with an English-speaking driver for a whole day for less than $40. And we're talking an educated, professional gentleman who was just a tremendous resource for me day after day when I was there. And we were able to have some really good conversations about our respective cultures and our histories. And he said probably one of the most, pointed things to me that anybody's ever said, and I'm so grateful for it. He said, you know, you people in the United States sit in those gray boxes in your office buildings, and I know you're not making magic there, but yet you get paid so much more than we do. And you've been going around this country and seeing how hard people work here and the innovation that they're doing every day and the little businesses that they're running out on the street. How is it that you can earn so much more money than we can here? What is it that you're really doing that's that much better?
What was your answer?
Nothing. I said, you're absolutely right. And I would love to be part of the process of equalizing these things. I think out of every country in the world, Indonesia is the one that's most on the move. I would love to go back in 10 years and 20 years and see, because that is on the rise. The people there, they're going places. It's very exciting to see.
We're getting toward the end here, so I just don't want to miss maybe one other takeaway you had that just we haven't topically covered. You know, what else do you just remember, like, this was important?
I had a kind of a breakdown in Anne's, Belgium, and it was at Fort de Lanson. And that fort was destroyed by the Germans in World War I when the Germans invaded Belgium and pretty much overran the country. And this is a very powerful lesson about meritocracy. That fort and other forts around it were designed by somebody who had the title of an engineer, but had no business doing that job. And because it was so poorly designed, a German shell hit that fort and blew the entire thing up in the air. It came down in pieces and landed on the 550-man garrison, killing most of them. And it is just, it broke my heart to see that. And I sat on the ground next to one of the memorials, and I just said, oh, to have the confidence of a mediocre white man, because that's so much of what happens in our society. People get promoted because they were born into something, born into white skin, born into a certain gender, and maybe they have a family name, and they get put in these positions, and they do things, and they, because of that, people die. The impact, it just cannot be underestimated.
So we're down to the last few seconds, and just tell me kind of how much longer are you going to do this? Where's your next trip?
I was supposed to go to Mongolia. I was on a wait list for a two-week trip that was to start in next week, and I didn't quite make it to the top of the list. So I'm going to be doing some training instead. I have some freelance work lined up, and I'm open to ideas from people and anything I can help with.
Well, we may have to have you back for part two on this after the next round of trip. So I really appreciate you coming on the show and sharing your thoughts. It's been great.
Thank you.
And it's good to see you.
You too, Keith.
All right.
Lakeshore Focus airs on Fridays at 7:30 p.m. and it's rebroadcast Sundays at 9:30 a.m. on Lakeshore PBS. And that's it for Regionally Speaking for today. I'm Chris Nolte. Thanks for being with us. And we'll be back with you tomorrow to wrap up the week.